Warning, do not listen to this podcast if hearing about freedom and liberty is not legal for you in your community. And if so, you should immediately move to a hipper community.
Welcome to the Freedom Fiends Podcast, where Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati cover the punk rockinist, hip-hopinist current events, as well as timeless universal truths about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, because there's no such thing as half-free. The Freedom Fiends Podcast, available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com. Welcome to the Freedom Fiends Distance Learning Anarchy Series with Freedom Fiends Michael W. Dean,
broadcasting from my windowless bunker,
and Nima Vedati.
Go, go, Freedom Fiends!
Yeah!
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 This is the Freedom Fiends non-radio midweek version where we do stuff we couldn't do normally on radio.
Yeah. So
we love our radio shows and we don't cuss on them. And this is where we, it's kind of like popping a boil. Like during the weekend, we do two shows. We can't cuss. We have to stay away from certain topics. And then it's like it festers and we have to get it out.
Yeah, I think I just take my pants off. I don't think we have to stay away from certain topics. I think we just have to be careful to talk about concepts rather than use words that the insiders know.
That's
like anarchy and anarcho-capitalism and all those.
That's exactly. Yeah. Although I did use the word ANCAP in passing. I noticed that.
Yeah, but somebody who doesn't know what that is probably thinks it's some kind of pop gun from the 1950s.
It's a fish.
Oh, it's a fish.
It's a fish that's native to Maine and Quebec, I believe.
Is it really?
The North American spotted ANCAP.
All right. There you go. It sounds more like a bird if it's spotted.
There you go. Yeah. So you're, well, fish can be spotted. So you're waiting on a piece of gear. You're one piece of gear away from perfection.
Perfection, yes. Temporary perfection. Ephemeral perfection.
I'm perfect now. I'm finally, there are holes in my hand regarding audio. I have reached perfection, as my mother would say.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
And why is that? Because you've got your RE 20.
Yep. And now you have the Effextron 2000, which does all the echo stuff I used to do, and now you do it.
Knobtron.
Do you know where RE20s are made? They're made in Minnesota.
Ah, Minnesota.
Minnesota is like, I never really thought about Minnesota for most of my life. And my wife's people are all from Minnesota. And
You people. I see.
You people. GCN is in Minnesota. We suddenly have, we're on the radio in Minnesota.
Yeah.
We suddenly have lots of listeners and callers from Minnesota. And let's see, I found the best e-vapor in the world is from a company called
The Plume Room.
Come on, man. Well, they didn't contact me back yet about advertising, so I can get it wrong until they do. But no, Plume Room, man. And they are in Wyoming, Minnesota, of all places. And their stuff is like, it's like making love to God. And it the lady who makes it is a chef, like a food chef.
Or it's like God making love in your mouth.
Yes.
Increases your lungs.
It's like a party. It's like a party in your mouth with a bunch of angels and everyone's coming.
Yeah. Ooh, nice.
Yeah.
Yep. That's the word from DJ Bingleschmidt.
Yep.
The Plume Room, baby.
And Wisconsin also is where the RE20 mics are made because that's where the Electro Voice Corporation
that's
is.
That's a different state, though, man.
What did I say? Wisconsin? Minnesota?
You said Wisconsin.
Minnesota. Yeah. I get it mixed up. No. Wisconsin. A bunch of Swedes moved here 200 years ago and got fat and ugly.
Okay.
It's what the Swedish guy on.
What's his name, though?
Death Clock
Squisgar. Squisgar.
Which I think is a takeoff on the Swiss Guard, but it's Squisgar. Yeah, he's from Sweden. And and it's kind of funny because they're visiting Wisconsin because that's where Pickle's family is from, Tomahawk, Wisconsin, which I forget if it's, I think it's a real place.
And I lived in Wisconsin for a year.
Why?
That was my dad's version of TV reporting. He went and was a college professor for a year and was like, man, screw this. I'm going to go make some real money. So Yeah, my dad was a professor at University of Wisconsin Madison, and I was a baby, so I don't remember, but I lived there.
Tomahawk, Wisconsin is a real place. That's where Toki's from. It's a population of 3,000. I'm looking at a picture of it. It looks like Westfield, New York, where I grew up in, the way it looked in the 60s, though.
Hmm.
Yeah, okay. So Madison, I've played Madison. Madison is kind of the crunchy progressive center in the middle of the Republican state.
It's kind of like what Austin is to Texas.
Yeah, and it was like the Madison Union Ledger, the newspaper there, is the paper that Joe McCarthy called when he coined the phrase the Prairie Pravda.
Wait, we didn't coin that phrase?
No. Man, you have Newsheimers. I told you this on the show about a year and a half ago, and it's in the glossary. I have a new word. I have a new phrase for the glossary I made up today. It's for bureaucrats.
Okay.
Paper goon.
Paper goon. I like it.
It rhymes with paper moon, so it sounds familiar instantly. I was thinking we should call this episode It's Only a Paper Goon, but I don't know if that works because only a paper goon. They're backed by goon goons.
Yeah, they got the goon goons. Yeah, man, I don't like them goon goons or their goon goon guns.
Well, speaking of which, there was a bunch of that on my block today. You know, I've lived here 4 years and I've never heard anyone screaming on my block until today. And I looked out the window and it was a cop in full riot gear screaming and pointing a Glock and running into the neighbor's house. And Nima is hearing this for the first time. I told him I had some tyranny to talk about, but I didn't say it was...
So you had a Death Star stormtrooper on your own street, Mr. Yeah. I live in rural Wyoming and it's so free here.
Yeah, and I want to stress again, I have never seen any violence or threats of violence or guns drawn on my street or in my town or in Wyoming in 4 years of being here. And on my block, in my neighborhood, I have never heard anyone raise their voice, literally, except to like wave at someone like, "Hey, Bill, how you doing?" from down the block. I've never heard someone saying, "Get on the fucking ground!" on my block. I thought it was like a domestic quarrel, like some couple had pulled over, because nobody fights on my street too. I thought like
maybe it was a mall ninja yelling at his girlfriend.
No, I thought maybe somebody was, you know, arguing. Sometimes people pull over to argue, which is the thing you should do because you don't want to be fighting while you're driving in traffic. So I thought it was, I just assumed that's what it was. And I looked out there and across the street, down the street, I saw a cop with a bulletproof vest on that said special agent on the back of it, which my wife tells me, since she's a works to defend the people these people bust, she says that's the Fed cop goons.
Yep.
And he was wearing the big steel helmet, and he was pointing a Glock at the ground and running towards the front door, which was already open. And then I looked, and there were like other people outside, cops outside the windows. There was the whole thing happened really, I don't know, it just made me think about like, yeah, in a couple of years, this is going to be happening to me for free speech or guns that are currently legal. And it's going to be, here's what was disgusting about it, other than the whole thing. after they quote unquote secured the house, which was basically was like, there was a Casper police car and then a bunch of special agents, probably six or seven of them. And they
did they have a Bearcat or an armored car? Or
no.
What'd they have?
They had...
Unmarked cars?
Yes. Either their own vehicles or vehicles they'd stolen. They all had, like, you know, big pickup trucks and Econo, I don't know what they're called, just trucks, like typical dude trucks in Wyoming. They look like typical Wyoming dudes. They look like nice, clean-cut boys next door. And after they secured, quote-unquote, the premises, they all walked down the street smiling, like practically high-fiving, but not quite, smiling, got in their cars and drove their cars up to the house. Like they all parked down the street to hide. And then once it was done, they all pulled up and double parked and triple parked and parked. Well, not triple parked, but.
Once they had cleared, they got to hold and build. Well, I guess the building will come next. Yeah.
Yeah. And they were there about an hour. And, it came really, really suddenly. I will say I've seen this happen when I lived in LA and San Francisco in kind of ghetto neighborhoods. There's a difference here with it. After they've secured everything here, they have horrible situational awareness. Like I was peeping through the window shades. They didn't see me. They didn't look around. In the ghetto, in big cities in the ghetto, after they've secured the house, they are really looking all over their shoulder. Like, okay, what, you know, because there's usually
when's his friends gonna come?
Yeah,
and harass us. Yeah, or when's the camera crew gonna come? Did a camera crew come? No. Did the news come? No?
I didn't see him. Although, I kind of got tired of it after a while. Just, you know, like, first of all.
You're like, screw this. I'm going to go watch The Shield.
Screw this. No, I'm working. Yeah. It has better camera. I can see better. That pine tree's in the way here. It's not on The Shield. But, yeah, and I saw one.
Well, did they detain anybody? Did you see?
I didn't get see. Thrown in the paddy wagon? I don't know. I think the house may have been empty. I mean, not cleared out empty, but nobody in it. Uh-huh. I saw somebody sitting on the front porch, but it was kind of obscured through a tree. They didn't look like they were dressed like a cop, but it might have just been a cop with his took his vest off to scratch an itch or something. So I don't think so. But it is a house that they did. The cops came about a month ago. My wife was out gardening and saw them take someone out of there in handcuffs. I told you about that.
Yeah. Wow.
But
man.
that was just a knock on the door. Are you here? Okay, you're coming with us. That was, or it might have been a domestic dispute. I don't know, but it wasn't a gang, you know, an armored gang showing up like it was today.
Yeah. I feel like you should be out protesting with a not in my backyard sign in front of the cop shop. No cops in my backyard.
I thought about going out and filming, and then I thought, first of all, this isn't very interesting. You know, second of all, I mean, I guess it's good to film in case
that's
you can
how
get
those
them,
things work. First, they're not interesting. You got to keep the camera on it for hours and hours.
Yeah, I also had stuff to do. I was in the middle of making promos for a radio station that's taking us starting next week. Not this weekend, but next weekend. Did you listen to the promos?
I did, yeah. Excellent job.
Cool.
Yeah. I could have done some, man.
I know, but you weren't around, man. You weren't around. You have to get the, when we get our secure bat phones and I have a pager that can wake you up 24/7, then you won't have an excuse. You'll be like, stop asking me instead of, why didn't you ask me?
And when I have my soundproofed room or halfway soundproofed room.
Yeah, you know, I just go ahead and do stuff like this. I mean, I thought about getting you getting DJ, but it's like, yeah, we're going to be doing hundreds of these, and eventually you'll do some, and you've already done some, and I was cutting this, you know, one of them is cutting my part into a part that already has you in it.
Yeah.
So you are represented.
Represent?
Yeah.
Yeah. MC Raymond Noodles on the mic,
I like that. You should have used that in that thing you did last night. We'll get to that thing, but I want to talk a little more about the goons, man.
No, Raymond Noodles is for fiends only.
All right.
It's exclusive. You only get to hear our bad jokes if you tune into The Fiends.
Fiends, Bialtres.
I own that. You didn't build that.
I built that.
You built that?
I built that. I said Raymond Noodles would be a great rap name.
You did?
Name.
Oh, yeah. Well, okay. Good enough.
You accepted my seed. You accepted my offer that I planted.
I'll stay away from that language. Yeah.
Foreshadowing. All right. So we can have an announcement. We can have an announcement this weekend.
Or we can have, let's wait for this weekend. Let's give
radio.
People something to look forward to.
Say it. Yeah. Radio.
Radio.
Yeah. So, cops. So, yeah, the one reason I didn't see the actual, like, kicking in the door kind of stuff was, unlike most white people, I have lived in a ghetto. And I know what most white.
Is it most white people who have never lived in the ghetto?
Yeah.
Most? Are you sure about that?
And I know something, therefore, that most white people don't know, which is when you hear people screaming and look out your window and see someone pointing guns, whether it's cops or brothers on the corner or crazy meth white trash dudes or whatever, whenever you look out your window and see people pointing guns and screaming, don't pop your head up like a marmot and go, oh, I want to look at this. Get the fuck down.
I want to be a witness.
Get the down. Go into the other room, the one behind the brick wall.
Lay in the bathtub.
Yeah. I didn't go lay in the bathtub, but, you know, I put a couple walls between me and that house. So, I'm at an angle where if there was gun, quote unquote, play at that house, it would hit my neighbor's brick house. It wouldn't hit my house. So, So, I did the right thing. I did not pop my head up like a squirrel.
I'm glad you're safe.
Yeah, but somebody isn't. And the really bizarre thing about it is, like, there was so much, I guess this is what they call professionalism. It really did look like people just doing their job. Like, it really looked, except for the screaming and the pointing of, let's see, one guy had an AR, two guys had Glocks, one guy had a shotgun that I saw. Aside from the weapons, it looked like a construction crew showing up, you know, cleaning a carpet and leaving. I mean, it was that systematic, professional guys smiling at each other. Let's go get lunch now. Yeah, that's the kind of takeaway from this, is that's what was the most disgusting thing about the whole thing to me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it seems like that's going to happen no matter what, right? I mean, I don't know if you can really fault them for that, but you can definitely fault the system, a system where you have this monopoly force that, you know, enforces the government's edicts that aren't fair and wouldn't be enforced if it was a market situation. I mean, I guess we don't know the situation, but, you know, it's probably some kind of drug thing or something like that, I would assume, man.
Yeah, probably drug or, you know, probably belief that there are drugs in the house and being sold, or, you know, based on the number of cops that were there, or, you know, serving a felony warrant for someone who's probably wanted for a drug warrant or some, you know, previous skipping bail or whatever. Just based on the organizations that were involved and the tactics used.
Right. I mean, if the feds are involved, you know.
Yeah. And they always do stuff like this during the day when kids are at school, which kind of makes sense in a way for safety of think of the children. But I also kind of think it's a thing of like, they don't want the kids to see this. You know, they don't want to see the goonery.
Well, you know, that's kind of silly because kids below age 5 or 3 even are home, right? Kids that are impressionable. They're still going to see it. I saw a SWAT raid in Washington. I was covering for the news, and there were kids in the house that was under siege. And there was a guy with a 308 sniper rifle pointed at the house that had little kids in it that were crying, obviously, because there's big men with guns pointing them at them.
Yeah, there are kids at that house, if it's still the same people living there. I have so little awareness of my neighbors. Like, I always talk about my neighbor and my neighbor, but really I'm only talking about two neighbors, the ones that ever talk to me in passing, and that's rare. That's when I'm outside and they're outside out front. But, like, I mean, these people live 3 doors down and across the street. I can see their house through some trees, through my front windows, and I could not describe the people who live in that house. They're white and they're under 50. That's all I could tell you. And I don't know how many there are, but I have seen kids of like, you know, 10 or 11 years old at that house. So, yeah.
Well, maybe they didn't buy their drug tax stamps, and that was the problem.
Okay, let's segue into that. Isn't that mind-blowing?
That's a good
segue. Isn't that funny?
Mind blown, yeah. And it's not just Kansas. I mean, I guess we're jumping the gun here, but this is a thing that happens in at least 10 states, according to the Kansas Department of Revenue. If you go to their website, they have a section for the drug tax stamp. And here's what it says. It said there are two reasons why illegal drugs are taxed. One, the fact that the business of dealing marijuana and controlled substances is illegal does not exempt it from taxation. Legitimate business transactions are taxed. Dealing drugs is a large part of a previously untaxed underground economy.
Are you reading the Kansas Department of Revenue site?
I am. They actually not only do they have that page you sent me, which is just kind of a brief.
Oh, I think you should read that brief paragraph. That's what I read, and my jaw dropped.
All right. It basically says what I just said, and then it says the drug tax is due as soon as the dealer takes possession of the marijuana or controlled substance. Payment of the drug tax will purchase the drug tax stamps. Attach the stamp to the marijuana and or controlled substance immediately after receiving the substance. The stamps are valid for 3 months. Drugs seized without stamps or having expired stamps may result in criminal or civil penalties.
Now, Kansas is not a medical marijuana state, and it's not one of the two states with legal regulated marijuana.
Right.
This basically says if you're a drug dealer, you have to go anonymously buy these tax stamps and place it on your marijuana before you sell it.
Yeah.
First of all, I want to know if anyone's ever actually done this, or this is just something they pass so they can add extra penalties when they bust somebody. Has anyone ever actually bought these? If you're in Kansas and want
to
call in.
Oh, we don't do calls right now.
I know.
But let me look. I found this Examiner article.
The second thing I want to know is if someone was buying from a person repeatedly and then one day they went to buy from the person and there was a big government seal on what they were buying, don't you think they'd just go quietly elsewhere?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. If there was something from the government on a bag of pot, man, I would never go to that guy again ever. But listen, I think people pay it. I don't know if they pay it in Kansas, but there's an Examiner article. It's a recent article, and it's about the IRS scandal with the Tea Party folks.
Tea Party. Yo.
And then they go on, after they complain about that, they cite this stuff as another bad thing that the IRS is letting people get away with. Oh, here you go. Apparently, it's also a law in Tennessee, which was modeled after a 14-year-old law in North Carolina. So it's not just Kansas. And Tennessee says the state of Tennessee has collected $83 million since the inception of that drug tax stamp. Now, I doubt that even touches the amount of actual drugs sold in Tennessee over 14 years. But somebody's paying it, man.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and the Kansas site actually has prices.
It says purchasing of drug stamps does not make possession of drugs legal.
No. No. What it sounds like to me is they have something else. They have another charge to charge you with if you get caught.
Well,
like,
you know,
instead of five charges, you can have 10.
I mean, we've talked about how they take people down on tax evasion when they have nothing else. Like, that's how they got some of the bootleggers back in the day when they couldn't get them on alcohol sales or murder or whatever else they were doing. But I've never seen it codified like this. Like, okay, here's where you buy. Now, where are the prices on here? Tax rates? Okay. Is that what you're looking at?
Yeah. What are the tax rates for marijuana? The tax rate is $3.50 per gram of processed. I guess that means dried in a baggie for you or in your jar, however you take it. A wet plant is 40 cents per gram. A dry plant is 90 cents per gram. You know, that's kind of reasonable. I think that's even cheaper than Colorado.
A wet plant at 40% per gram is pretty high. I mean, wet plant
right.
It dries down to like, you know, 1/8 or 1/10 of the weight. So that's like $4 per gram.
But the processed one is about right. I mean, Washington State, I think their rate was 25% during each stage of the process.
Oh, look to the right of that, though. Controlled substance. It just says controlled substance. $200 per gram or portion of gram. Yeah, $2,000.
For Coke or meth, it's 200 per gram. For a pill, $2,000 per 50 units. That's insane. I don't know. I haven't bought or sold prescription drugs in a long time. But that sounds like a lot of money to me, man. $2,000 per 50.
They tax everything. Look at the other stuff that's on this Kansas list. Individual income tax, liquor gallonage tax, liquor excise tax, motor fuel tax, oil inspection fee, prepaid wireless fee, privilege tax, banks, trust savings and loans, 2.2% of whatever you make or maybe have in banks.
This is kind of surprising to me coming from Kansas, because it's one of those states where there really is nothing. In a lot of those states, you figure people are there because the government will leave them alone.
Well,
right?
They're there to farm, and that's what's there. There's not nothing there. It's endless farms. And a lot of these are related to farming. There's motor fuel. There's, you know, privileges. There's well taxes, water taxes. Tire taxes, water protection fee. What is that? Clean water drinking fee. If you have clean water, we're going to charge you extra for it. Cigarette tax, corporation tax. Yeah, all this stuff is to punish farmers. I'm surprised fertilizer tax isn't on here. Monsanto, no, because Monsanto wants that cheap. Because Kansas, I mean, isn't it pretty much taken over by corn when it should be growing? You know, the market would have it growing other things, but not just corn.
It might be one of those states. I read Michael Pollan's book a few years ago, which is probably outdated by now, but I think they were talking about Iowa as being a big example of that, where pretty much the whole state is corn part of the year, and the other part of the year it's soybeans, you know, or however they rotate them. I'm not sure if a year is the exact time, but pretty much just corn and soybeans, corn and soybeans, corn and soybeans, because those are the two big commodity crops.
Yeah. I just wonder when it's going to come down. I just wonder when my little bubble of the world is wonderful and I do my radio show and it's great is going to, you know, I mean, just seeing like goons going into a house that's like 75 yards away. It just, ugh, man. And then I look at taxes and then I live in this bubble of like, Libpear, man, everything's cool. It's all wonderful. Yeah. And I just can rant at the tyranny and it'll never poke me back. Yeah. You know what, though?
Well,
I will say this. I will say this. I'll bet you if one of us got particularly tyrannized, we could make a couple calls and get on Alex Jones's show and tell the world.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, anybody could do that. Anybody could call him up. But, you know, we could call the guy who does the board hopping on his show every day probably and say, hey, here's what happened. Do you want to see if he wants to get us on? And he'd probably be like, yeah, let me ask him in the break. Okay, hook up your Comrex. It'll sound really good, you know.
So speaking of Alex Jones, did you hear his interview with Mike Judge?
You sent it to me, but I've been very busy working on our own show.
It's actually really good.
I'll stick Alex Jones on you.
I do encourage people to listen to that. He replayed it a couple times, but I kept missing the key part that I wanted to hear because it sounded at one point. I was hearing it on this pirate station, so there was a lot of static. But it sounded like Mike Judge was alluding to the fact that that Dale Gribble was inspired in some way by Alex Jones' old public access show.
I thought – I was sure that he was inspired by Art Bell because when he does his radio show – he sounds more like when he does his when Dale Gribble does his most powerful station in the Tri-Yard area pirate radio show. He sounds like Art Bell.
I'm sure he was influenced by a lot of things, not just archetype of one person. But yeah. Apparently, the guy who did Dale Gribble's voice was a guy that Mike Judge knew personally. He wasn't like some star that they pulled off the bench. Fox wanted him to pick some star, and Mike Judge was like, no, this guy's the guy. He's who I see in my head, and he does the voice perfect, and he's actually like believes some kooky things. And he said, you know, there's something to some of these things, but, you know, some of them are just kind of kooky. But apparently the guy who does the voice would sometimes just riff on something, and they'd go, yeah, let's keep that.
When was Alex Jones's talk show that you talked about?
I don't know when it started, but I remember it as early as 2003 or 4.
Okay, Art Bell was on the radio doing weird stuff in 1978.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so yeah, Art Bell is an influence on Alex Jones probably because Art Bell was like the only guy doing like weird occult late night, you know, wires in my brain, the government's going to get you kind of stuff. He was doing that in 1978, man.
Wow. Mm. Yeah, man. I mean, I'm sure before there was Art Bell, there was somebody talking about it somewhere. Maybe not on radio.
Well, there was Father Coughlin. I mean, he was, I don't think he was talking about the occult, but he was talking about the Bolsheviks in the government or whatever in 1937 or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Radio has a long history of yelling about the government. It's one of the things it's for, man.
Which is kind
of
funny because it's such a government-regulated medium, which leads me back to the government must see a reason for it, though, too. By 1937, it was already regulated.
Oh, it definitely was by then.
Put it this way, by the time people knew what it was regulated. I mean, there were people broadcasting. The only people listening were other hobbyists who could build their own radio. I mean, it wasn't like you could go buy a radio even.
Right. It wasn't something you sat around in your family room and listened to.
It was something that the geeks of the late 20s did. You know, like, oh, he's got that weird thing, you know.
It was the Bitcoin of its day.
Yeah. Speaking of Bitcoin and taxes, the feds and raids, here's a good segue. The feds went after something called Liberty Reserve. Did you hear about that?
I did. I'm not exactly sure what Liberty Reserve is.
It was kind of like PayPal, but with the anonymity of Bitcoin.
Did it use Bitcoin?
No, it used money.
A number of different currencies?
It used different currencies the way PayPal does. Basically, it was a way for people to exchange in commerce without being poked or prodded or taxed or effed with. And, of course, governments got together, and mainly the U.S. government said, that's no good, and said, this is being used by child pornographers and drug terrorists and, you know.
Of course. Yeah.
And they shut it down. But here's my belief is that the unintended or maybe even intended consequence is those people will all switch to Bitcoin and Litecoin.
Well, yeah, that's a good point is because Bitcoin, like BitTorrent, you know, doesn't have a head they can cut off. It doesn't have an office they can shut down. They did shut down, you know, some big clearinghouse for it like a month ago, didn't they? Fort Gox or something like that. I forget what it's called. But the price just barely dipped, you know, and people kept trading Bitcoins. Somebody also brought up a really good point that you know how the police are fond of stealing cash if you have it. So if you go to do something like buy a used car and you bring your couple grand because that was the price you agreed on with the guy on Craigslist, you know, the police see that. They can just take it. You know, they don't even need a warrant or nothing. They just take it. You know, Bitcoin is a great alternative for stuff like that. You just go to the guy, and if he's got a Bitcoin wallet, you know, Just wait till the funds are transferred and drive away. There's nothing the cops can take.
The government loves to interfere with interstate commerce, which is pretty funny because the mission statement of why the Federal Bureau of Investigation exists, the main thing they say that they prevent, you know, other than just dealing with crimes at a federal level, is they exist to prevent people from interfering with interstate commerce.
Interstate commerce, yeah, right.
Which is what the government does all day long. I mean, actually, the guy who started the FBI, what was his name? The weirdo?
J. Edgar Hoover?
Yeah, J. Edgar Hoover.
Yeah.
He was really moralistic, which was really weird because he was a closeted gay and, you know.
Well, yeah, that's not weird. That's obvious.
Yeah, but he was persecuting people for being gay and, you know, basically right. Anything he could use against somebody. But he was asked about prostitution. No. He was asked about oral sex, if the FBI could do anything about it.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. And his answer was, unfortunately, unless it's interfering with interstate commerce, the answer is no. And then somebody said, well, yeah, I guess, like, you know, the lot lizard hookers at the truck stop might make the deliveries late, but
well, yeah, that's the thing. They can justify the interstate commerce thing any way they want. Like when they the Supreme Court case with the guy who's growing his own wheat during the Depression, and they said, well, the fact that he's growing his own wheat means he's not buying wheat on the regular market, which means the price, it's going to affect the price in some slight manner. So in that way, it does affect interstate commerce.
I think they should we should rename the Commerce Clause of the U.S. Constitution the Interfering with Interstate Commerce Clause, because that's what is done under the guise of that clause constantly.
It is. And it's hard to tell if that's the intention or if that's the way it shakes out or if it's just a systemic problem. Stefan Molyneux is fond of saying, you know, whenever there's violence, you get the opposite of what the violence was intended to fix.
Whenever there's violence?
Yeah, he doesn't really. He says, whenever you use violence to fix a problem, you get the opposite effect. The problem gets worse.
Well, if you read Hologram of Liberty by Boston Tea Party, he says absolutely that everything, a lot of stuff in the Constitution was intentionally set up and snuck in with weasel words by the Hamiltonians, the founding lawyers, as he called them, to basically bring us to where we are now and beyond. Those guys wanted to be king. You know, it was basically Hamilton and Washington. And when people say the founding fathers, blah, 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 you can't speak of the founding fathers collectively because there were at least two main camps of them that were kind of diametrically opposed in what they wanted.
And obviously the Hamiltonians won, and we're living in the world that has been wrought by them.
Well, in Scott Beezer, no, it's in Scott Beezer.
The probability
and,
brooch.
Yes,
I'm actually rereading it. Yeah.
Yeah.
The words are L. Neil Smith. The art is Beezer.
The Hamiltonians are the enemies in that.
Yeah.
They're
it's basically funny because
it's LibPair, but there's a small group of radicals who want to take it back away from LibPair to a tyranny, and they're the Hamiltonian society.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I'm actually rereading it. It's great. I do advise everybody to reread it if you've already read it, and read it. If you have not, it is great. I guess started rereading it because I wanted to lay in bed late at night and read a comic before bed. And I was out of Quantum Vibe strips to read. So with Quantum Vibe, sometimes I like to wait a couple weeks and then go and read 2 weeks worth. But I was all out.
I was out of new episodes of we're going to talk about that show. So I watched some new old Breaking Bad. But we're going to go to the market. And then we're going to come back and talk about our new term. Paper goon, which is our word for bureaucrats. All right.
Yes.
Need to talk to people in a secure manner? Liberty Private Network sells phones that will work over any good internet connection and give you military-grade encryption for calls that cannot be tapped. Great for lawyers and clients, business people with trade secrets, or just ordinary folk who don't want their love talk spied on by some scumbag from the central scrutinizer. Call 516-TLK-SAFE on your non-secure phone and tell them the Freedom Fiends sent you. That's 516-TLK-SAFE.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a torrent club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. fiendsandfiends.com. You can also blog The Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review The Freedom Fiends and Anarchy Gumbo and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many Liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
Turn on my headphones. Turn them up. Yo, fisticuffs. Turn them up. Yo.
Fisticuffs.
Yo. Turn them up. Turn them up. Yo. Turn them up. Fisticuffs should do a raps with Ramen Noodles, I think.
Okay. We could do that.
Yeah.
Who's Fisticuffs? You?
No, it's from Chappelle's Show. It's a rapper who, like, all his whole rap that's a hit is just a, like, a sound check. It's just like, yo, yeah, turn it up, turn it up. Nice. I can't hear you. No, really, turn it up. Yo, turn it up. I said turn it up. I've been shot in the ear. Turn it up. Yeah, nice. That's his backstory, is he was shot in the ear. So.
Ah, okay. So he needs it up.
Yeah. Oh, we're not. Yeah, we're rolling. All right. So, yeah, Paper Goon.
Goon.
I kind of like it. I kind of don't. I kind of like it because it is what a bureaucrat is. It's a paper goon. But I kind of don't like it because it understates the tyrannical power of a bureaucrat. Because paper goons sounds like paper tiger, which means someone who seems like a threat but isn't. Paper goons are a real threat because they write stuff down on paper and it becomes backed by
people SWAT team
kicking in doors. Yeah. But I like it. We'll put it up the anarchist flagpole and see who doesn't salute it.
Yeah, who doesn't? There you go. Okay. Well, it's you're trying to put it in coinage. We'll see if it's in circulation next week. And then if so, we can add it to the glossary.
My volume control has shipped. The other day, we talked so much. The other day I was talking to you and, like, I was telling you how Crazy Rich made a meme that said, "Give me money," and it showed me as a baby.
Yeah,
and someone immediately gave us like $5. And then we only had like $3 in the account. So we suddenly had enough for me to order something the Fiends need, which is a $7.99 with shipping volume control headphone extension cord.
Ah, good.
Which is because I record the show on an H2 out of a splitter that the headphones are on. But there's a weird thing about this mixer where you can't, like, it's not logarithmic the last tenth of the way, so you can't turn it down lower. And having it at a really good volume to record the show sounding really good is a little bit too loud in my ear, especially with turning up the treble like we are now to kind of get us through all of the compression and limiting that they do along the chain.
Right. Plus, you have the tinnitus.
I got the tinnitus.
Or is it tinnitus? Tinnitus. I call it tinnitus.
It's tinnitus, but commonly it's tinnitus, so I'd say it's tinnitus. Yeah. It wins out.
You're always like, Nima, don't use so many hi-hats and crashes. It hurts my ears.
Mix that. You got to mix your hip-hop with old people in mind.
Right?
Yeah. Now, video sucks compared to audio. I did this week, okay, somebody about a year ago said, I'm making this documentary about this club in Kansas that your band played at two times in the 80s. And it was a really cool club. It was like, it was in the middle. It's called the Outhouse. It's this literally a windowless bunker in the middle of nowhere in a cornfield in Kansas. And it probably couldn't exist now because they probably have a fun tax in Kansas now. I didn't scroll all the way down that PDF, but and a punk rock tax and probably a unsupervised lib pair tax. But it was really cool, and it was and I did an interview, and I talked it, you know, he sent me questions, and I interviewed myself and filmed it and sent him the data.
Right.
And of course, you know, he's on a Mac and isn't that experienced of an editor and said, I can't import these .mts files you sent me.
I don't know what that is.
Yeah. Which, again, I go back to the, like, people who say, Apples are great and you're horrible because you use a PC. Okay, here, listen to this. I can fucking import any fucking piece of video in the world on a PC. And half the time I send video that I've shot that's never even entered my PC. They're shot in the camera, and I send it to someone who's working on a Mac, and they're like, I don't know what this is. I can't open it. Please fix it for me, okay? Right. So anybody who says Macs are better than PCs, really, there's not that much difference, and there's no moral reason or even usefulness reason anymore to say Macs are better than PCs. They're about the same, but really, PCs are a little better because they can do crap that Macs can't. So,
well, we did have that problem with Guns and Weed where one of the cameras we used was sold as native to Final Cut Pro, and we had a codec problem. You had to buy
it. Yeah, and I solved it.
Codec for $100.
I solved it. I said I'm making a film, and I took $100 of my own money, and I bought the thing that does it.
Yep.
And this guy, I'm not dissing this guy. I like him, but he's like, he also has raised a lot of money on Kickstarter, which I always bitch about people on Kickstarter. I'm just like, get a job, man. Do it yourself. And like, he's raised, you know, I don't know how much, $5,000-$10,000, something like that. Like way more than we spent on the whole Guns and Weed movie. And you know, I allocated money, and there's still no movie, and there's like, where, you know, why didn't you just, instead of telling me, reshoot this or convert this for me, why didn't you just do a Google search and spend $100 for whatever plugin you needed, you know?
Yeah.
So, I'm not bitching at him. He's a good guy, and he's a first-time filmmaker, and he's putting a lot of his own time into this, so I'm totally cutting him a break, but I'm just kind of complaining about, first of all, PCs versus Mac, the argument that Macs are better, they're not, because, you know, what I just said. Secondly,
it's a jail, man. It all comes down to jail.
It's not open source. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the second thing is, I want to argue audio over video, because I spent...
Now, how do you mean? Because that's an interesting take. What do you mean audio over video?
Because, okay, I spent, you know, I had recorded like 8 minutes of stuff for him. Now, I'm actually glad he couldn't do it, because here's what I did. I've lost like 18 or 20 pounds since I shot that. I looked puffy and bloated, and had really like long, weird 70s hair.
And he didn't have that cool scar either.
And I didn't have that cool scar. I didn't have my cool microphone. So I reshot it with my new skinny, scarred up face that looks like, and I have a really punk rock looking haircut. I look like I just got out of slam dancing at the outhouse. I look like I just had a great night of fun at the outhouse where I happened to get a beer bottle broken over my face, and it was great. It was part of my night. Woo. And I got to use my RE20. Now, here's the thing. I tried plugging the RE20 into the camera, and it did not work. It was an impedance problem. And I know how to fix that, but I'd have to order something. But I just wanted to do this that day and get it out of my way. So what I did was I took my lavalier. I was already set up to do it. I had the camera everywhere I wanted. I had everything like I wanted, but I couldn't use this mic, but I was already using it. So I just clipped the lavalier mic on the back of the RE20 where you couldn't see it. So
field
it looks
expedience.
Yes.
That's what I'm talking about.
And faking it for TV basically. So it looks like I'm doing a radio show. I'm talking to the RE20 with my mixer behind me and a bunch of rack mount gear. But I'm actually talking to a little $29 lavalier clip-on mic that's clipped onto the shock mount away from the camera.
Yeah.
So I did that, but then I spent about 12 hours converting this to a format that he can read, you know, and outputting it and burning a test DVD for him. You know, I also sent him a video DVD, which he said absolutely do that because he can rip audio and video off a video DVD. So after doing 10 hours of conversion work for him, if he still can't get it, which would totally be his fault, not an issue with my end or with any technology, it'd be that he's a first-time filmmaker. If that's the case, then he could definitely rip the standard definition video with good audio off of the video DVD I made. So, but basically to record 10 minutes of stuff, it took me and deal with it and get it to him. It took me 12 hours to do. Now, today I did some radio promos for a radio station. Now, granted, it was only 45 seconds worth of material, but it took me about 5 minutes. And then I emailed it to him. You know, I had to snail mail this to this guy. It was like 18 gigs of data. It was a bunch of DVDs in a box.
Right. Well, I mean, one thing I've always noticed, and video is so much more labor intensive
for
so many reasons, not just the technical reasons. But, you know, we should use the tools at our disposal. You know, we as anarchists or ANCAPs don't have a whole lot of resources or even a whole lot of manpower or people or volunteers. Not enough, at least, to do video as well as the evil statists. But since audio is so much cheaper, so much easier, you know, that is something we can totally corner, I think.
I don't really see why so many talk show hosts do video, because most of the time they're not showing anything with the video. It's like watching someone check their email, like Alex Jones and Adam Kokesh, you know, I mean, and they're both pretty animated. So I guess that's something to watch, but you can totally hear that in their voice too. And I'm not picking on them. I'm just saying, like, why do you have a video of a podcast? I guess I kind of like the way Free Talk Live do it, where the main delivery is audio and radio, but they actually have a place on their site where you can go to the video live feed. You know, they don't they don't upload those like the other guys do. But it's kind of cute because you get to see, you know, who the guests are, and you get to see the cat walking around the studio. I like that.
Well, there are things video does and emotions video can evoke that just speech can't. But it's different. If you're producing video for that purpose, you need to produce it with the video in mind, right?
Yeah.
Not with the audio in mind.
Yeah, video.
When I worked in TV, we would have people come and talk to us about, you know, this is a visual medium. That's the one advantage we have. And it's a lot more work. But if you use that to your advantage, then it becomes something people want to come back and see over and over and over again. But, you know, you write your stories visually with the visuals in mind, then it's a different thing. But yeah, just putting video on a podcast.
Video of someone doing a radio show doesn't add anything. It's about as interesting as watching a guy check his email. So I guess what I'm getting around to is I'm saying that I'm not going to do video anymore. And I'm not saying never, but I think I'm officially announcing my retirement as a filmmaker today.
Huh.
And helping a young filmmaker drove the nail in the coffin for me. So that's good.
Okay. I'm not ready to go there. I still like making video. I love video editing. But yeah, I don't want to do video.
I'm also
for a podcaster.
From time to time, people ask me to be in their documentaries, and I often offer to do what I did for him so they don't have to fly to Wyoming. Cause you know, I mean, they'll fly to San Francisco and New York cause they can interview 10 people for their movie there, but there's nobody else in Wyoming they ever want to interview. So, what I'm going to do from now on is I'm going to, have a permanently uploaded linked little thing of like 10 seconds of the video format I want to send. And I'm going to say, okay, before I do this, download this and tell me if you can import this into your editing program. And if not, I'm not going to do it. That's not a lot to ask, man. It's really, it's
no,
like,
not at all.
You know, I mean, if you were, if some Hollywood film company, really wanted some film footage that you had exclusively had, like the Rodney King beating or something, you know, and you gave it to him on VHS, do you think they'd be like, oh, go back and film that again? We don't have the player for that. You know, it's just, it's just amateur hour, man. And it's not just the amount of money with that, because I made films where I had no money and I had stuff that was, you know, an interview that I needed for a documentary that was on, like, let's say DV cam. I found somebody with a DV cam and, you know, either paid him or bartered or got a favor to get him to convert it to something I could use. Craigslist is for that, man. Craigslist is great.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
And if you
and
don't,
if all
you
else
can,
fails,
if you
for
don't,
B-roll,
if you don't,
always,
if you don't live in a city where you can do, hang on, if you don't live in a city where you can do that, you can find someone and then mail it to them and then you can mail it back. Okay. If, go ahead.
I was going to say, if all else fails for B-roll, sometimes I will just set the camera up on a tripod at a perfect angle on a flat screen. You know, a lot of TVs you can film and it'll look pretty decent, you know, 80, 90% of what it looks like coming out of the screen. Just make sure you white balance on the TV instead of something in the room. You can brighten it up later in post. And, you know, it does the trick for B-roll. I mean, probably wouldn't work for an interview, but for B-roll, it's
well, we actually used that for A-roll in the Guns and Weed movie. I filmed off of the monitor for the YouTube video, the cell phone video of the cop shooting himself in the foot. And it did look kind of weird, but the original footage looked kind of weird,
too. It was bad quality anyway. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Something and that was, like, you know, okay. I mean, what am I going to say? Am I going to say, I'm going to write the kid who did that and said, I can't use this. Go get another cop to shoot himself and film it on something I can use.
Yeah, that's exactly what you should have done, yeah. Michael. Come on, man. It's not rocket science.
Yeah. So I guess I am officially announcing my retirement from filmmaking. I love audio so much more. And I'm old and ugly. Who wants to see me anymore?
Like, you don't have to be the subject of your videos.
I'm not Michael Moore. I'm not Michael Moore. I'm not a young, handsome Michael Moore.
You were barely in Guns and Weed. I think there was just you cowering in the closet talking about they killed your kitties. And
the only reason I'm in Guns and Weed is because we didn't know any actors here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We tried to wrangle some up and we had some volunteers. We ended up with the one girl, Jesse. We had Mahoney. We were able to cobble together.
We did good.
Talent.
But, you know, in LA, I mean, literally, you can swing a cat and hit eight actors. I mean, you could walk into any Starbucks in LA and say, hey, who wants to be in a film? It doesn't pay, but you can put it, it's going to actually come out on DVD and you can put it in your reel and I will buy you lunch. You would have like eight people throwing their hands up. I called the Casper Theater Department and talked to an assistant to the director there about getting some people to act in Guns and Weed. And he did not call me back. And he sounded like I was asking if I could come over and anally rape him. I mean, seriously.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. So, man, I mean, audio right now is my focus too, but I still love video. I totally understand what you're saying, but I'm not retiring. I think video is fun and I'm still going to do it, but it is never, or at least right now, it's not my main priority.
It's just so easy to produce high quality stuff quickly, edit it, render it, transport it compared to video. I mean, video takes like 10 to 100 times as long for all those things.
And you can reach so many more people. And like I said before, there are certain instances where you need video. With audio, you reach so many more people.
You can also consume it while you're doing other things. I mean,
that's my point, yeah.
Although there is the thing of like, music can be background and talk radio can't. Like, I don't think I've ever gone into a cafe where they were playing talk radio, because people want to talk in a cafe. They're always playing music or nothing. But who wants to be background, man?
Yeah, it's a good point. You know, and there are a lot of videos out there, even in the Liberty community, or maybe especially in the Liberty community, that are, you know, they won't just show the guy talking and that'll be the video. They'll have like images and B-roll, but it's usually just like graphics that with like a slow camera move, and it's like really.
I like the tiny dot, man. The tiny dot is one of the coolest.
Though.
It's animation,
it's animation, and it proves a visual point that's important.
Yeah, and it's basically illustrated narration, which is a really pretty easy way to do video and tell a story. Speaking of which, I saw an incredible movie the other day. It's called Moonrise Kingdom. Have you heard of it?
Never.
It's a Wes Anderson film. He did The Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou.
Did you do Scream?
No, that's Wes. Did
Wes
I say
Craven.
Wes Craven? No, wait. Wes Craven.
You said Wes Craven.
Wes
in the
Anderson.
Notes.
Wes Anderson. Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, he's more of a everything he does is he uses a lot of the same actors, he uses a lot of the same crew, and they're all ensemble movies. Like they all have like 12 main characters that get an equal amount of time. Okay. Moonrise Kingdom is a new movie about two 12-year-olds who are married in 1965, and the state is the enemy in the movie.
Ah, because they won't let them be married or what?
No, because the kid is an orphan and they want to put him in protective service and give him a lobotomy because he's really, really smart and has problems getting along with other kids. It takes place in the 60s.
Wow.
And basically a bunch of scouts, they call them khaki scouts. They're basically Boy Scouts, but he's a scout and, the scouts save him and take him, away from the state. And he and his 12-year-old girlfriend get married.
Good. There needs to be more movies where the state is the enemy, because that is the real enemy, right?
It's got a great cast, too. It's Bruce Willis, Edward Norton, Bill Murray, Frances McDormand, who was the mother in the movie Fargo, Jason Schwartzman, and Bob Balaban, who's funny
as
hell.
And this is a new movie? Like, I can go see
last
it in
year,
the theater?
Last year. It's on HBO right now, all week.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
All week.
Yep.
Yeah. Tip your waitress. Cool. Sounds good, man. Maybe I'll check it out, but probably not.
So you,
I'm fiending to rewatch Idiocracy because of that Mike Judge interview.
Did you finish watching the thing we've been waiting for forever?
Arrested Development. Yeah. No, I'm on like episode 5.
Well, I have some spoilers.
All right, spoiler alert.
Everybody fast forward 3 minutes or more. I watched all of the season and I watched it in a binge of two sittings, and You said that the producer of it warned people against watching it all at once because he said it would end up being not funny. Now, here's what I think. I think he knew it wasn't that funny and said that so he because he knew everyone would binge on it and he could say, hey, man, I told you. Yeah, it's OK. It's OK. The first four are pretty good. Then it kind of goes into this weird math thing that's like a total shark jump, which is kind of funny because it's directed by the guy who was in the show, you know, produced by and narrated by what's his name? Opie Cunningham.
Ron Howard.
Yeah, Ron Howard, who was in Happy Days, which is where Fonzie jumped the shark. And Fonzie, the guy who played him, is a lawyer in Arrested Development, and he actually jumps over a small shark on a dock in one scene. Did
nice.
You catch that?
I haven't gotten
there yet. Did you? No, that was in a previous season.
Oh, it was. Maybe I did catch that then.
Yeah, but the whole season, basically the first like four episodes describe the whole story of the timeline that takes place. And then the other like 10 episodes just go back and kind of show it from different angles, not really different angles, but different people's perception of it.
Different viewpoints.
Yeah. And they add a little bit of more information each time of what happened, but it kind of feels like they just didn't have enough time and took every idea that came up in the writer's room and said, okay, we can make this work. If we do it this way, make all these half jokes work.
Well, I also heard one of the restrictions they were dealing with was scheduling problems since everybody, you know, they've got their own projects now. So they couldn't get all – it was hard for them to get all the actors in one place at one time.
That makes sense.
So,
yeah.
So that's part of the reason they had the story structure like
well,
that.
Well, you know, Buster wasn't in it except in flashback until the last two episodes. And suddenly I went, oh, yeah, Buster. I didn't miss him at all.
Well, he was in the – oh, but he's so funny. He was in like the first episode when the parents announced that they're getting divorced and it's a ruse and Buster kind of screams.
But I'm also thinking like, is he really the one that was the most busy of all those actors? I doubt it.
Right.
But it's kind of funny.
I've never seen him in
anything. This is a total – you should go la, 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 la if you haven't seen it yet. But Buster becomes a drone pilot and he becomes the first drone pilot in U.S. history injured in the line of duty.
Nice. Nice.
And if you know Buster, you're like, of course he did.
Right.
Of course he was.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Yep.
Oy vey.
And they also have maybe they're doing maybe's hair different. It's real cute. It looks really like 50s or early 60s. And it looks a lot like Joni from the old movie they had the shark jump. This TV Happy Days. She looks like Joni from the Iraqi Joni.
I wonder if 10 or 15 years from now we'll start giving drone operators purple hearts for having carpal tunnel syndrome.
Buster falls out of his chair.
Does he?
Falls out of his chair and injured. But he doesn't know he's killing people. He thinks he's playing a video game. That's how the Army gets him to do it.
It's kind of like Ender's Game, right? That movie's coming out pretty soon.
And you've talked about that. I don't know much about it, but go ahead.
Yeah. Well, in the book, he thinks it's still training because, you know, they're training to fight the buggers, which are bug-like aliens that are supposedly trying to invade Earth. And they end up getting to the home world. And Ender is like the big guy who knows how to, you know, he's little, but he's like the best general. And he thinks it's still a simulation. But at some point, they switched it from a simulation to actual battle without telling him. And he goes to the enemy homeworld and xenocides them. That's the word they use. I don't think they use it as a verb, but he commits xenocide and kills all of them on their homeworld. And then he's all like cheering, like, yeah, I won the game. And they're like, no, you just massacred a whole race of sentient beings. And he's like, oh, sads. And so he spends the next few books repenting for his xenocide.
And then it spun off on Futurama into Bender's Game.
I don't remember the movies too well. They weren't.
That's an episode. I think it's an episode, not a movie.
No, really?
Bender's Game, I think, is an episode, not a movie.
Okay. Well, I won't fight you on it.
I'm looking it up to see. Nah, you're right. It's a film. Yeah, yeah. The films. Okay. I like the Beast with a Billion Backs. That was pretty good.
That was pretty good.
It's basically
David Cross.
The whole world becomes an orgy.
Yeah, yeah. Whole world becomes an orgy, and David Cross is the guy who's boning everybody. Good times, man. You know what? Speaking of movies, because I thought Futurama suffered in quality when it was the 90-minute length as a movie, because I didn't feel like it sustained itself for that long. You know, I like the short little bits, but Arrested Development, because it's Netflix native, you know, it's not produced for a TV format, the episodes are all like 31 minutes long, actual runtime. Whereas a normal TV episode of a sitcom that fits in a 30-minute time slot is actually like 22 to 24 minutes in time. And some people were saying that that is, you know, one of the things that they don't like about the new season is they feel like there's stuff in there that's kind of just filler, like they're fitting it in there that could have been cut to make it shorter, snappier, and more poppy. So, yeah, man, more time's not always a great thing. I remember when we were first conceiving our podcast, I wanted them to be 20-minute chunks.
I know.
Because I was so used to hearing Scott Horton's 20-minute interviews, and I really loved that. And you're like, nah, man, it's got to be an hour.
Yep.
And I'm glad you won that one.
And then pretty soon, as opposed to the other ones, I'm not glad you won. Yeah.
I'm just saying, you were right.
No, I was. Well, I had experience doing podcasts, and you had experience doing 10 minutes on the news.
Yeah.
So I knew that 60 minutes could be go by in a snap and be snappy and be listenable. And the thing I was really, really aware of is a lot of people listen to podcasts on a commute, and they want it to be their whole commute and or there and back. And 10 minutes is not a commute anywhere except Casper.
Right. Yeah, man. And that's how I consume podcasts. I'm sure people consume it in different ways, but you know, I was upset the other day when I was trying to find that Mike Judge interview. I was driving and searching the web on my smartphone at the same time, trying to find a quick link to the podcast, and all I could find was videos of it. And I'm like, man, come on now. Audio. Just give me a link to the MP3. That's all I need.
Yep. You know, the other day when we played the Retro Encabulator, remember that?
Oh, yeah.
That video about the non-existent technology, and there were several different videos of it because it was done from a paper someone wrote in the 50s. We played one, and I was like, nah, that one's not good. Find the other one. The one that I said wasn't good, when I listened to it back, I heard him say who it is. It was Hank Green, who's actually a YouTube like bigwig star, who did the blurb on the cover of the YouTube book I wrote for O'Reilly Media.
Oh. There you go. Small world.
I have a bunch of O'Reilly Media bashing I want to do, but I'm wondering if we should save it for radio. Maybe I'll just tease it here. Obama.
What's the name of the guy who does the O'Reilly? What's the guy's first name?
Oh, Tim O'Reilly.
Tim O'Reilly.
Okay. No relation to Bill. Tim O'Reilly's from Ireland.
Well, there was something you had sent me that was about 3D printing. It was a speech out South by Southwest or something. And I'm not sure if that's who he was referencing, but somebody was like talking about, well, I'm a fan of what O'Reilly says, that content producers should be more worried about obscurity than piracy. You know, if people are pirating your stuff, it means you're popular. So
that's an amazing quote, and I love it. And that is from Tim O'Reilly, who's the owner of O'Reilly Media, who I've done writing work for. I co-wrote the YouTube and Insider's Guide to Climbing the Charts book. I wrote a couple chapters of a book on video production hacks, and I was the tech editor on a book of video production that someone else wrote, and I used to write for their blog and was paid to write for their blog, basically stuff on podcasting.
Until you started loving guns.
That might have something to do with it. I mean, that's what I say. It was around that time, but it was also around the time that a lot of people were getting laid off there. You know, so I don't know that that was direct. But I found some things that were really interesting along that whole line. And it totally plays back to my thing of the brilliant, genius, futurist scientists always get it wrong. Tim O'Reilly is a brilliant guy, and that company is really brilliant, and they do a lot of really cool things. And one is they started putting all of their print books out Creative Commons many years ago, like very soon after Creative Commons existed. They basically said everyone should pirate all this stuff, and they made crap loads of money doing it. They didn't lose money doing it. They made money, and they became the geek book company to the point where, like, oh, you know that show, The It Crowd, The IT Crowd, that British comedy?
Yeah, I've seen the title. And anyway, thought, man, there's eye roll. Like, I'm not watching
you
that.
Know, like the set dressers for the office those guys work in put a bunch of O'Reilly posters on the wall, and sometimes the guys wear O'Reilly t-shirts. It's the tech book company that the cover of almost all their books is a weird drawing of a weird animal that has nothing to do usually with, you know, I mean, sometimes it does, like it'll be the Python programming guide for the Python language of programming. Uh-huh. And it'll be a picture of a Python. But sometimes it's just, you know, a lemur for something about web design. It's like, what's that got to do with anything? And their checks actually have a lemur on them. It's kind of cool. Like the big eyed, like little beast.
Okay. Yeah.
But yeah, so Tim O'Reilly said that brilliant thing. Now, say it again. It was so brilliant, I want to have you repeat it.
Ah, well, this is a rough paraphrase, but basically it goes like this. Content producers should be more concerned with obscurity than piracy, because if people are pirating your media, then obviously you're popular.
Yep. Yep. And that's it. That's pretty much word for word. And that's true. And I love it. Now, on the other hand, that guy has written articles about how great Obama is, and he totally believes in politics, and he totally believes politics can save the world, and he believes that government should become an open source provider, basically meaning government should still tax you and steal you, but it should give everyone back all the information in a downloadable way. And recently, Obama did that with certain media, and all of the nerds are praising him, which I can't believe. I mean, they're saying it's true. He is the most transparent president in history. Like, this is while he's trying to clamp down on the internet, while the government is trying to stop people from being able to trade freely on the internet,
while he's stealing phone records from the AP and charging a Fox News reporter with I don't even know what
treason. I don't know, something like
pretty close, aiding the enemy almost.
Yeah,
just because he asked a question about what North Korea will do in the face of further sanctions, which is a completely safe question.
Where did he ask that question?
Well, it was I don't know if it was a White House official, but it was some executive branch official. And so normally in that situation, the White House can have a case, or the Justice Department can have a case against the official for leaking the secret. But it wasn't even a secret. It was just like, yeah, Kim Jong-il will probably do a nuclear test. And that's just like looking back at history and saying, oh, well, whenever you clamp down on the North Koreans, they do some kind of bravado thing like that. But they're saying that because he said this and the reporter asked him, just the fact that the reporter asked is in the sense of aiding the enemy.
Yeah. I mean, this is a slight exaggeration, but it kind of reminds me of if, like, let's say Hitler at the top of his Hitler game had released all the books in the National Berlin Library for everyone to photocopy. And people said, he is so great. He's so great for releasing all this information that wants to be free.
Information that would be free without the government owning the monopoly on the libraries, right?
Yeah.
Because this Obama thing, isn't it? It's mostly weather data that they're praising him for, right? Because people can link to all this weather data now, and now it's more open source. But hey, man, if private companies owned those satellites, they would be so jumping at the prospect of making a buck by putting the information out. They would be reaching for the piracy rather than the obscurity, you know, to go back to what we were just saying. Anytime you're a company with a profit motive, you're always looking at new ways of monetizing whatever you have that you can give the public. You're going to try to make a buck on it. And I used to work for a really big internet commerce place, and they would always tell us, you know, if it's something that customers keep asking for, let us know, because maybe that's something we can make a buck off of. If there's a problem, a tech problem that needs fixing, and we can charge them somehow in some way or provide it as an extra service, let us know, because we're definitely interested in making more money. And because they gave stock ownership to employees, we were all about it. You know, we want the stock to go up. So anytime you have a profit motive, man, I mean, the problem with the government keeping this data apparently behind some kind of wall, that's not a problem of, you know, that's a problem because it's the government. That's inherent to the fact that they don't have a profit motive, and you have to wait for somebody to come along and say, oh yeah, let's go ahead and release this for some odd reason.
Yep. Let's go to the market and then come back and complain more about Tim O'Reilly. I've got things to say.
Yeah.
Howdy, I'm Ben Stone from the Bad Quaker Podcast. I'll teach you the difference between the government and the state, why the government is nothing without the state, and how to dissolve the state while remaining peaceful and even calm. I knew the state was a losing proposition decades before that was cool. Check out the Bad Quaker podcast at badquaker.com. We have a forum, and it's got gardening tips. That's badquaker.com.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
So, yeah, I had to go check my mail because the government finally left my street and the government mail guy brought my mail. And I wanted to wait for the government to leave my street because they're dangerous and they're running around with guns yelling. So their cars are all gone. So it was safe for me to go outside and check my mail.
Good. Good. Tell me what that mail like.
It was all junk mail for pizzas, you damn pizza industrial complex member.
That's me.
So before we get into Nima's boring adventures with the legalese this week, I just want to say I'm really disappointed in Tim O'Reilly because he is a brilliant, brilliant guy. I've talked to him on the phone. I've exchanged emails with him when I was working at that company. I've listened to TED Talks. He's involved with putting on the TED Talks too. O'Reilly Media is, and he is. And he gets so many things right, so much better than so many people. But he just misses on this government thing. He doesn't get that 3D printing can replace government, that the internet can replace government. It's not something to augment government or streamline government. It can eliminate it, the need for it, and he should really realize that and look at it.
Yeah, yeah. It's a really good point, man. There's no need for violent initiation of aggression all the time anymore, man. There can still be rules, you know, without rulers. One of the most perfect examples, I saw this recently as a meme on Facebook, which I thought of before, but never put so succinctly, was it's just a picture of the periodic table, and it says rules without rulers. You know, there's no central plan for what elements make water or what elements combine to make certain chemicals. But there are rules, you know, that stuff matters. And people can manipulate those rules. They can discover those rules. They can use those rules to their advantage. That's basically what chemists do. You know?
My eighth grade chemistry understanding of that, too, which is accurate up to the eighth grade level, is that there are rules in how the periodic table exists, not just in how it's arranged. The names are made up by people. They are organized from, you know, in number of electrons from one to whatever they're up to now.
Atomic weight.
Yeah, and a lot of the top ones now only exist theoretically for moments in cyclotrons. But, you know,
I think it's the bottom ones that do that.
Bottom top meaning the ones with the most electrons.
Okay.
I'm kind of dyslexic that way. Like I always called the heavy strings on the guitar the bottom strings, but most people call them the top because they're closest to your head when you're playing the guitar. I call those the bottom strings. But yeah, so like, you know, hydrogen, helium, all those light ones. The thing is, the ones that are near each other on the table have similar characteristics. You know, the heavy metals are poisonous. Some of them are, the radioactive ones are near each other. The gases are near each other. The noble gases, the inert gases are near each other. So yeah, there are rules of nature that exist in that.
Columns share characteristics, and I think rows
also
share characteristics.
Yeah, I know rows do. What are the column characteristics?
I don't remember, man. I'm not a chemist.
How tasty they are?
I guess, yeah.
How good they are in your gat?
There you go. But yeah, I mean, you don't have to, you can be a layman and just realize that the point is, that this is a natural order. I mean, you're not going to put, you know, two hydrogen molecules and an oxygen molecule together and get iron. That's never going to happen. You're going to get water, you know, that's the rule, you know, and nobody invented that, but somebody did discover it.
When you think about it, a gun is just a chemistry set because it produces reliably the same chemistry interaction over and over and over. It combines nitrogen and oxygen and produces expanding gas. And then it, you know, hits something that's connected to something with some mercury in it, which is connected to something made of brass, which is copper and zinc, and then it takes something that's lead and spits it out. So it's basically just an electromechanical, chemical thermal reaction device that uses about five or six elements in it. It's pretty simple, man.
Yeah.
I mean, why should that
I like Boston's term that it's just a modern way to throw a rock.
Yeah. I also like his term that an unloaded pistol is a rock and an unloaded rifle is a club, which kind of it goes along to me with it kind of the only thing that really makes a lot of sense to me about what Adam's doing is the fact that he wants to carry loaded weapons, because there have been a lot of marches with unloaded weapons. And I'm like, why? Why are you disarming and carrying a club? You know?
Right.
But I guess that's the way of the world now. They disarm the Marines that are carrying, you know, that are guarding the president, supposedly.
Well, you know, I sort of fell off the wagon on this whole Kokesh thing since he got out of prison. Are you up to date on that? I mean, what's going on? Is he still going to do the thing? Did he get out of it?
I've been more concerned with your terrible deals with the legal industry. Let's talk about yours. I mean, I'm not up to date on him. I don't know. Eddie Free was going to come on the show on Saturday and talk about Adam because he knows him well and he knows what's up. But then Adam got out Friday night. So he didn't want to steal his thunder because he said Adam was making an announcement Monday. I was too busy with my own stuff to see what Adam's announcement was Monday. Did you see it?
No, that's why I was asking.
Looked at his Twitter feed a couple times and I think he was like so anxious to make up for having been in jail. There were so many tweets about tyranny today's that were unrelated to his tyranny today. That I don't know, you know, he was just like, hey, I guess if you're in jail and you get out and you're an internet guy, you want to be on the internet going, I got to catch up with the tyranny. So I couldn't find what his announcement was. But let's talk about your problems that
pale in comparison.
Nima got a traffic ticket and tried to fight it. And then after 2 hours decided, I give up. I'll just pay it. Which is what they want you to do. But it's what
standing
I would have done.
Standing in the face of the state on things like that, man. I feel like I could better fight the state from my computer making media that educates people to the nature of the state than sitting there in a courtroom waiting for my name to be called. And my last name starts with a V. So I have to wait till the end of every hearing.
I didn't
hearing.
Think about
it's annoying.
That. That's funny.
But yeah, I had a ticket for not wearing a seatbelt from a few months back. The cop said he saw me put the seatbelt on. And it was right after I left the parking lot of Domino's. So, yeah, I put my seatbelt on and left. That's how seatbelts work, I thought. But anyway, I was going to fight that, and I had it set up. And then I had another ticket for failure to obey posted sign. And I was going to fight that, too, because the posted sign was no left turn. And I didn't turn left. I came straight out of a parking lot and went on the street. So I was going to fight that, too. And then I get to court, and I'm there for an hour, and I'm like, man, I hate this. I don't want to be here. And I get up to the guy, and I'm like, yeah. He's like, oh, I see you got this other ticket. I'll dismiss it if you pay in full this current one and then take a driver safety class. And I was like, okay, you got me. I'm sick of this. I'll do it. Where do I sign? So I don't know. He cut me a deal and whatever. I'm a bad little fighter of that kind
of
stuff,
man.
That way.
I think there are some people who would say, oh, you're a pussy, you're a theorist, you just want to talk, you don't want to fight the system. But you know
talking
what?
Fights the system, though.
It does. And you choose your battles. There are court cases worth getting all your resources together and fighting full force with.
Right.
And that wobbler on the traffic ticket of whether or not that was ticketable under their laws, going into their courtroom to try to fight it, and then just realizing they are going to bore me until I submit and say, please at least use some legalese so it doesn't hurt too bad, which they did. Yeah. You know,
well, like Scott Horton is so fond of saying, the courts, it's not their job. The prosecutor is not his job to find the truth and absolve you of guilt if he thinks you're not guilty. It's his job to get a win as quickly as possible and get it over with.
It's his job
to get you to sign on a piece of paper. And
he's a paper goon.
He's a paper goon. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so,
Beat you. He wants to beat you into submission by a million paper cuts.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and the other thing is, I think to really get any kind of sense is to have of justice, you know, the best chance you have is some kind of jury trial. So at least you can put that in the ball in the court of your supposed peers. At least they're more your peers than the judge and the prosecutor. But apparently, you know, in bigger cities, it's just so tough to do that logistically. The prosecutor said, you know, you could come back and forth to court 4, 5, 6 times before we can actually get a jury that's able to hear you. And, you know, it's not worth – it's more worth it for me to pay the money than to spend that kind of time. You know, I'm more productive spending that time doing something else to make actual money or to work on the fiends or to just be with my family.
I have a weird follow-up question. Now that you've been through this and the fiends are getting more important and more time intensive and family, well, we can't talk about that yet, but are you going to – did they win in that are you going to be more careful – about obeying those little nanny laws that drag you away and take your time?
Well, that's the thing is, you know, I guess I could be more careful, but I felt like I was already pretty careful. You know, I didn't willingly or with malice disregard the posted sign or I don't know, man. That's the reason it upsets me so much is because part of the thing, the deal I cut with the prosecutor was I can't get any more moving violations for 90 days within the city of Austin. And I'm just thinking to myself, there's something they can always get you for, you know. You can be pretty much as attentive as you can be and still miss something that you didn't see or do something you didn't know you weren't supposed to do. And if the right cop is watching at the right time and he feels like it, he can nail you to the wall for it. I mean, that's part of the problem with the system in the first place, right? So I guess I'll try to be more careful, but that doesn't assure me that I'm not going to get knocked again.
Yeah. I made up a term. It's instead of BC and AD, it's a new thing. It's BG and AG. It's before Cody's gun and after Cody's pinball gun.
I love
because
it.
Because
yeah.
It really changed everything. And it was, I'm trying to find out when it was. It was about a month ago, but yeah.
Yeah, mark that on a calendar somewhere, man.
BG and AG.
I like stuff like that. It reminds me of, since I've already said this, I'm rereading Probability Broach, and they have in the alternate time stream where Washington's Whiskey Rebellion, Washington lost and Liberty won, and the Articles of Confederation reigned instead of the Constitution, so there was more freedom. They call it AL, the date when the Whiskey Rebellion was won by the farmers instead of Washington.
After L. Neil Smith?
I think it's after Liberty, but yeah, whatever you want to call it.
I like
after
it.
After Liberty.
I like it.
So after Liberty, AL, and before gun, and after gun, AG.
So we have some updates on bass traps. Do you want to read what Christian Seeger sent you to follow up on your
wondering about
sound controlling, sound conditioning?
Yeah, yeah. Because we are teaching hospital.
I like the crazy rich sound conditioner meme. It was like hair conditioner.
Oh, yeah.
It was a product.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it should have. I suggested that he update it and put a picture of the product being squirted into an ear on the label.
Nice. Yeah. Well, we are a teaching hospital, and we know people. So we've got a fiend fan who's really awesome, and he kind of does this stuff for a living.
We don't even have to fiend source it. We just say it, and people say,
"Yeah, it's great."
Where we're wrong, or expand on things and help. Tell us how great we are.
So
whatever.
Do we give his name out?
Yeah,
and say how awesome
Christian
he is?
Seeger. Okay. Christian used to be the. There's an interview I did with him on the Gumbo. Oh, today's Gumbo, by the way, is a 1 minute song. It's an MP3 of the KittyFeet.com theme song, the glam version from the year 2000. If someone wants to check that out, my friend Cliff Truesdell and I did that a long time ago, and it's pretty damn groovy. We used it a couple times in the cast, and people were like, that's great. Where can I get that? And I didn't have an interviewee this week, so I just made the podcast a 1 minute song. So
nice.
You'll be listening to LRN on between two shows. You'll just hear a punk rock tune. It'll go into that show. But yeah, there you go. But Christian was the sound man for the Butthole Surfers, and he really knows his stuff.
He does. And because he heard us talking about soundproofing, sound conditioning, which are two different things, and bass traps, he brought
this little gem on us. Oh, speaking of bass traps, hang on, be quiet for a sec. Somebody was driving by blasting hip-hop, and it was being picked up by the RE20. So go ahead.
Okay. Well, if they had bass traps in their car, it wouldn't help. Because according to Christian Seeger, bass traps are not soundproofing. They won't stop low frequencies from leaving the room. They're generally used in the control room for treating low frequency problems inside the control room. Say your room shape causes the studio monitors to create a standing wave at 100 hertz, right where the producers like to sit on the couch. All the records coming out of that studio will have a big hole in the low end where the producer tried to compensate. A couple of well-placed bass traps can fix that, but it won't stop the lows from escaping. He goes on to say perhaps the best way to keep bass from getting out is not to generate it at all. He points to these things that he says he uses with in-ear monitoring for drummers on the road called sound transducers.
It's basically something that goes under your butt. It shakes your butt.
It's something you sit speaker. On, and yeah. Yeah, it applies vibration to you. I guess it, in a similar way it would feel if the bass was hitting you from outside of your butt.
I wonder if you could, if ladies could put it on and put on some really thumping hip-hop and enjoy it a little more.
Well, now, the way that I produce bass, though, I'm standing up. Because when I produce bass, I'm DJing, and I stand. I like to stand up to work in general. So
just put it down your pants, man.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to do that. But I did
put
ask
some brown,
about...
Put some brown sound through it.
Well, I asked him a follow-up and said, okay, so what would work for a cheap situation? He says the cheap situation, bookshelves, books. So line the walls with bookshelves and put cheap books in them that you can get from half-price books or garage sales. You know, you buy a penny for old dime store novels that nobody is ever going to read. You don't have to actually read them.
Excellent.
But you just stuff them in the bookshelves. And then it's like you have those giant thick walls with layers in them. So yeah, man, that's genius. So I think I'm gonna do that. I'm gonna do bookshelves. We already have two big bookshelves with a bunch of books. Get a couple more, maybe buy a few cheap books, and yeah, man, augment it with whatever I can, carpets on the walls, things like that, to actually do some sound conditioning as well.
Siri, kill Flanders.
That's the updated version. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's about all I got, except I got one comment on Bill Maher. But
Yeah, let's go ahead and make fun of Bill Maher some more. What do you got?
Well, I couldn't pronounce his name. I thought it was Mayer because it's spelled – people who spell their name that way often call it Mayer, like John Mayer. I think it's spelled the same way.
No, I think Mayer was actually
maybe?
With a Y. Yeah.
Okay, but not sure, I have a mnemonic to remember it now. Bill Maher is marring the word libertarian.
Ah, he sure is. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, good. Now maybe you'll remember it. The other one you always say is you always say Rush Limbaugh.
I think I'm making fun of him.
Like,
though.
I'm a baller.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There also, I got to say that there's a new Bitcoin type currency. There's Bitcoin, there's Litecoin, and now there's a new one. It's called Peepee Coin.
Right, which is peer-to-peer coin. But
yeah.
Yes, it's Peepee
Coin.
Peepee Coin.
Peepee Coin.
Yeah.
It's the... Yes. All right. That's all I got.
All right. Yeah, I think I'm done too.
Yeah. I'm going to just go edit this and put it up and do some housework now that I can go outside and the government isn't out there shooting at pointing guns at people. And I'm just going to be glad that they got the address right or at least didn't get it wrong and get it my address.
Oh, yeah. Count yourself lucky, man. Thank you for your service, Michael, and thank you, fiends, for listening.
Worms.
Peace.
Hello, freedom fiends. It's your boy, Dean, from the U.S. Get the U.S. out my bloodstream. I-O-E, and that includes endorphins. No one won't ask permission, and I won't say please. Freedom fans, one fact that I gotta make clear.
The Freedom Fiends podcast is covered by a Creative Commons Attribution Share-alike 3.0 license. Do what you want with it and spread it around. Tell two friends. Make copies. Email it to everyone you know. Go on the site and comment. This is a conversation. Three times a week, Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati share their own unique take on the way the world works and how to find your place in it. Available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com. Subscribe and tell two friends.
And remember, the only power they have is the power you allow them. We're not saying the Freedom Fiends are the one true path to anarchist liberation, but it's a good one. If you want to put your voluntarist money where your mouth is, consider making a donation to the Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post. Then make a one-time gift via PayPal or set up a monthly contribution of as little as $3. Giving to the Freedom Fiends helps advance education of horizontal liberation throughout the world. The Freedom Fiends. We work hard, so send us some money.
This is the Central Scrutiny.